Welcome to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. Today, I talk with Becky Margraf. Becky is the platform manager for DIY.org, an online learning community for kids. She's well known for her 100-day projects involving felt faces, and most recently, her felt pocket series. We talk about how her career path led her from majoring in graphic design to running DIY.org. Wanting to work on things that make a difference, working on personal projects as a creative outlet and an emotional anchor during a stressful year, and more, all right after this. Jack Prince is one of our favorite companies to work with. They offer great products at even better prices, with some of the best customer service I've ever seen. Why not pick Jack Prince next time you need t-shirts, business cards, stickers, or flyers printed? Right now, Jack Prince is offering 4-day turnaround on their most popular apparel products. That's 4 days with no rush fees, no hassle, and no BS. With apparel from popular brands like American Apparel, Next Level, Gildan, Allstyle, and more, starting as low as $3.99 each. Now is the time to take advantage of this great offer. Visit jack.inc/4days to order your apparel today. Plus, Jack Prince is giving Creative South Podcast listeners 20% off all orders over $25 when you use promo code CREATESOUTH17 at checkout. Visit jackprince.com for your next order of stickers, prints, or whatever you need today. We've gone through and streamlined the Creative South Podcast Patreon page, cleaning out the excess and making it easier for you to support us. With options starting at just $1 per month, you can help support the podcast and even wind up with some cool Creative South Podcast swag. Every dollar helps cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. When you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, Creative South podcast stickers and t-shirts. So, please help support the podcast and become a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth. Becky, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Hey, I'm so happy to be here. Thanks.
So where'd you grow up? We were talking a little bit about this off air, but where'd you grow up?
Yeah, I was born and bred in Texas. I grew up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, okay. And I lived there up through the end of high school, and then I hightailed it to the East Coast for college. So I went to school in Boston, but I spent most of all of my childhood in Texas. And kind of exploring the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I suppose. I didn't really go anywhere else other than that.
When you were growing up, were you an artsy kid or?
Yeah, I definitely tinkered with a little bit of everything. I wasn't really sure. I don't think I was really sure what exactly I wanted to do. So I would experiment with like little projects, a lot like I do now, I guess. I dabbled in, it was actually when I first started sewing, was in early high school, and now it's like this thing that I do all the time. Sure. But I did a little bit of like sewing projects. I did some painting stuff. There are some really terrible paintings that I made hanging in my parents' house still. a lot of little bits of like bits and pieces of art and just experimenting with that. I kind of just dabbled and I wasn't really sure. And then I eventually, once I got to high school, I joined our newspaper staff because I was interested in journalism. Mm-hmm. And then realized pretty shortly thereafterwards that I enjoyed designing the pages much more than I enjoyed, you know, writing about school's sports teams, which I wasn't very good at. So I think that was probably a good transition. So I got, I had always been interested in design, but I sort of dove into that passion and I started, really reading books and following blogs and, starting to learn about, design and designers and sort of the fundamentals and teaching myself about typography. Mm-hmm. So I got, I was on the newspaper staff for a little bit and then I transitioned to the yearbook. Mm-hmm. And then I did the yearbook. I was very attached to the yearbook for 3 years and ended up designing, a bunch of three, like 800 page yearbooks and like the systems for those. And that sort of transitioned me into, going to school for graphic design and kind of pursuing creative projects and being, doing art and design professionally. But I wasn't as a kid, I don't think I really knew that that was what I wanted to do. It was just something I was kind of drawn towards.
Sure.
And actually, I was a pretty, I sang and I performed and I did a lot of, that was kind of like another big passion that I spent a lot of time pursuing. Mm-hmm. So when I hit high school age and late high school, especially, and was trying to figure out which thing I was going, like which path I was going to follow, there was, you know, that was kind of a hard thing to choose between. So, but
rather, whether you're going to be a starving artist or a starving musician.
Yeah. Well, my parents really wanted me to go to music school. And I've always been tickled by this, like, no, mom and dad, like, I don't want to, like, there's no money in music. I want to be an artist. Like, I don't know. It was, I think there was, you know, we kind of butted heads about that a little bit. But I had the yearbook teacher, mm-hmm. She, met with my parents and told them I was a good designer. I had good ideas and it was worth pursuing, mm-hmm. And getting a degree and kind of having that be my career if that was what I was interested in. So, and I'm grateful for her, grateful to her for that. I think it was the right choice. I still, do a lot of stuff with music on my own time and like as a personal, meditation, I guess. I don't really share it anywhere. But,
sure. That explains the keyboard and ukulele behind you.
Oh, yeah. Can you see? I don't know how much of my apartment you can see. Yeah,
I can see the keyboard and the ukulele and a poster.
Piles of weird musical instruments. Yeah. Like every once in a while, there will be like a weird Kickstarter for like a strange MIDI controller, and I will spend too much money on it, or someone will give it to me, and then I just have them in a pile here on my couch. lots of creative expression across the board, I guess. So
gotcha.
And
when you got out of high school, you said you went to Boston for college. Did you? Well, where in Boston for college? Because there's a lot of colleges in Boston.
There sure are. Yeah, there are a great many. So I went to the Massachusetts College of Art and Design, mm-hmm. which is a pretty small school. It's really one building. It's like one huge, tall, black skyscraper kind of plopped in between Northeastern and Wentworth, mm-hmm. Kind of near Fenway Park.
Okay.
And so I got my undergraduate degree in graphic design from MassArt, which was an amazing experience. I mean, I really liked the East Coast, especially. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, growing up in Texas is a very, especially the area I grew up in was like, it was very conservative. It wasn't very diverse. There was a lot of, you know, a lot of people who sort of, we're all sort of interested in the same things. And like, I think as a person who was interested in art and who was interested in exploring the world and like meeting, a diverse collection of people, I really, I didn't get a lot of that in the sort of small town in Texas that I grew up in. So going to a city was a big change. Going to an art school was a particularly big change. It was a really great environment. I learned a lot about, you know, from my classes, but I also learned a lot from the people that I met and the, just the environment that I had access to.
Sure. So when you're at school, did you start off studying graphic design or were you still trying to figure it out like your first year?
You know, I did. I came in, you know, knowing that I was interested in design. Design is such a, you know, it's such a huge kind of broadly encompassing, field there. You know, I, as a person who creates things, like I've always been really drawn to traditional mediums, and sort of tactile design. So like, I've always liked making things by hand. And I do enjoy using the computer and I pretty much anything vector-based. So like I loved, typesetting. I love making visual, vector art and things like that. But there was always something that I was very attached to, building design and sculpture or painting it in ink or sewing it or kind of anything like that. So I knew I wanted to be a designer, and the nice thing about MassArt, and I think a lot of art programs do this, but MassArt had a studio foundation year. So the freshman year, everyone takes classes from the same collection. Mm-hmm. Those cover drawing fundamentals. There's some color theory work. Everyone takes something called form study, where you sort of explore basic 3D and like using foam core to make like architectural type structures, or like using
I did that class and did very badly in it.
Yeah,
not very badly.
A lot of people feel that
not as much as I would have liked.
Yeah, and I mean, I think a lot of people, especially people who were like, I want to like, it's like, I am a lettering artist, like, that is what I want to do, that's why I'm here, like, those kinds of people, those people especially, I think, were like, people who knew what they wanted to do, and that wasn't 3D, were just like, why am I doing this? This is awful. But I've always really liked, especially making, like 3D geometric forms, like, something really satisfying about making, like, a chipboard box, or like a sculpture, or like a thing. So I enjoyed it. I don't know if I did well, but I enjoyed it.
I just didn't like my teacher.
That's a whole other thing. Yeah,
I don't think I would have been thrilled with the class to begin with. It just, that's not how my brain works.
Yeah,
but the teacher was
like kind of, I'm like half there.
Not well liked.
Oh, that's a bummer. Yeah, there's, you know, another joy of the art world and art school is there are a lot of very strong personalities, and they don't always mix. So there were certainly teachers who I felt very similarly about. But so the foundation year was really helpful in terms of kind of getting a wide breadth of experience and kind of dabbling in every medium a little bit. And I think some kids kind of came in knowing what they wanted to do. And I, like I said, fortunately, like I kind of had our, I had that connection to what I was working on. And, I was really passionately, always researching design. Like it was something that was my, like my obsessive hobby and my work and my, like all my friends, like kind of every element of my life at that point was sort of linked to that passion. So, sure. I just like went straight into it. But I had, because I knew that I could use that foundation year to explore, you know, a bunch of techniques and mediums that I could then apply to my work, which is really kind of how I approach my creative projects now. Like I like to dabble in a little bit of everything. So I have this like big toolbox of solutions that I can use if I'm like trying to figure out a problem, like solve a problem or make something for someone or like something I'm not familiar with.
Sure.
So that was all really cool. And then MassArt has a pretty impressive and kind of unique design program in that they do cover a lot of the sort of traditional fundamentals. So, you know, the sophomore year, once you actually break into the degree, like we did a ton of a lot of type by hand. Like we would sort of hand render type forms in ink over and over. Like we would like learn the anatomy of the type. We would practice craft, especially like making sure that we like everything that we made was very carefully presented, and there was a lot of care put into the design work that we were making and making by hand. Sure. And that I think was really, I mean, for me, especially like because of the things that I like doing, like that, I really enjoyed that. I think it might have been torturous to some of my peers who were very passionate digital designers. Uh-huh. I think, you know, those fundamentals have a ton of value. And I still recognize that I use those a lot. But we also, you know, as we progressed through the program, we started learning about, we had a class plus dedicated to learning design research fundamentals and applying those to our projects. Mm-hmm. Learned about UX and UI, and we did wireframing, and we actually made click-through prototypes to like present these like full body projects that had a lot of different touch points or like a lot of elements to them. So like we got a pretty wide pass at all of the different elements that contribute to a career in design or like different directions that you can go. So there was I really enjoyed my time at school. Mm-hmm. Like the people that I met were great. A lot of the teachers that I still talk to now. And I was really grateful to have a good experience with all of that.
Gotcha. When you got through with college, what did you end up doing? Did you tool around for a little while, or did you go out into the workforce right away?
Yeah, I am. Well, I for a little bit, I tinkered with the idea of going to grad school. There was a program at MassArt called the Dynamic Media Institute, which was run by a lot of the same professors that were leading the undergraduate program, the graphic design undergraduate program. Sure. And I was really, I was close with a lot of the graduate students who were in the dynamic media program. One of my best friends at the school, who was an employee at the school at the time, transitioned into that graduate program. So through him, I met all of the people who were in that program. And I hung out with them, and they invited me to their studios. And through them, I learned an amazing collection of things that I wouldn't have gotten in my undergraduate classes. Like, I learned about projection mapping. They taught me a lot of basic Arduino prototyping. I worked with processing and started learning about experiential design and building interactive experiences, which was really interesting and totally different than making a book with some letter form samples in it. So it was it was a really cool glimpse into sort of the next level of what I could have been doing and the sort of design that I could be making. Mm-hmm. And I was really, I was feeling, as I think most people do when you're nearing the end of college, I was well, gosh, I wonder what I'm going to do. I hope I get a job. I hope I get a job that I like. I guess maybe I haven't earned the right to have a job that I like. Who knows what's going to happen? So I debated about applying for a graduate for the graduate program, and I ended up talking to a couple of the teachers the ones that I mentioned who people I was really close with, and they were like, "Well, you can't. Mm-hmm. You'll definitely get more out of it." Years down the road, you'll have more experience that you can contribute. You will gain more from from the experience of the people that you're with. So, I put that on hold, and I ended up working for. So I got an internship. It was an internship I was really stoked about, actually, at a design innovation firm. It's kind of like IDEO, a place called Continuum that has. I think they've got a couple. They've got a. They were in West Newton, Massachusetts, but they have got one in LA. There's one in, they have a couple of international, places, maybe one in Spain and one in China, but they had, so that was cool. They invented the Swiffer.
Fancy.
My favorite project, I didn't get to work on it, but my favorite project from their portfolio was the one laptop per child project that they worked on with the MIT Media Lab. So they had this whole wall covered in all of the prototypes of what the one laptop per child, the kind of green sort of looks like a lily pad. It's this sort of plastic, bright green, low cost manufacturer laptop that they distributed to kids in I wish I remembered exactly where, a few different third world countries, I think over in South America maybe, but yeah,
I think so there were some in South America and some in Africa. I remember that project.
It was really neat, and so they had these really tremendous fab labs, and they had this really wide ranging selection of clients who they worked with. So I was on the brand design team for 3 or 4 months as an intern, and I got to work, I worked on much like IDEO, it's if you work there, you can never talk about anything because it's all NDA protected, and nothing ever actually makes it anywhere or makes it to market or past the iteration phase. But I worked on things for healthcare industries. I did this whole collection of research into the fast casual dining experience. So I went to a bunch of McDonald's and documented the entire user experience of buying a hamburger. But I did that for 20 different places. And we designed new menu items for Chili's and all of these totally random things. It wasn't actually Chili's. Chili's is a stand-in because I can't say the name of the actual company, but, Yeah, so I got a pretty broad range of experience for that, but it ended up not turning into a full-time thing. And I wasn't really feeling the brand design aspect also. Like a lot of it was, I was making a lot of, pitch decks and, sure. working in some really, rigid templates for PowerPoint. A lot. And then making icons and logo mocks and stuff like that. And it wasn't really the kind of, it was an interesting environment. There were really unique problems to solve, but the work that I was doing, I didn't feel very connected to. And mm-hmm. I connected to the place, but I wasn't so passionate about the things that I was making. I really enjoyed the research element of it. Sure. But I got a lot of really great, training and experience and like met really incredible people who sort of pursued design research full time. And, that was really great. But I had this kind of itch to be making something and like making something that I could pour all of my energy into. So that ended up not turning into a full-time thing, which was fine. And then I did freelance for about 6 months after that, as I was, cause I was trying to find, I got it in my head that I could find the job that I really like somehow I'd find this job that could fuse like my interest in print and tangible design. Cause print is fine. It's so, it was so popular. Sure. It was really challenging, as anyone who has ever been interested in print design, knows, but, so I freelance.
You're talking to someone who has a background in print design.
Yeah. So. Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I know. And I certainly know. Yeah. I know that, it's getting harder and harder, which is
it is. Definitely. I mean, it still exists, and it's
print
design isn't going away.
I certainly don't think it's dying, but it is much harder to find jobs as like a person who binds books all day, which was kind of what I wanted to do at that point.
Sure.
In my unenlightened like naivety of like being like, I can do this. It exists somewhere. But I was interested in tangible physical design, but my kind of the topic and concepts that I was really interested in, especially during my senior year of college and kind of moving out of that, was the application of design and design research and scientific research into what education was going to look like, and what, how to, especially like my senior thesis project, sort of was based around how I could make, print design or like a tangible object, which ended up being a children's book or sort of a prototype of a children's book that used tangible elements to, connect to like young kids who were using it. So I was really interested in researching, like the connection to the five senses and how those things like those could be utilized in order to create some sort of valuable learning experience or like, connect someone to information. And so that, I was really, as I was kind of, after Continuum and while I was freelancing, I was sort of looking for a job, a design job, a visual job in that industry somewhere, which I would later learn is referred to now as ed tech. I hadn't heard the term until I moved to the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. But for, the education and technology, those worlds have been, colliding and have been sort of merging. And a lot of people are putting a lot of time and energy and, now money into kind of exploring what like kids in the digital world look like. Sure. And so, this was, so, if, 20, this, it was almost 5 years ago was when I was starting to look at, into work, into this kind of work. And there, on the East Coast, I really couldn't find much of anything that, kind of balanced those two elements. And I was feeling very, I was feeling very stubborn and telling myself like, these have to exist. Like I will find them. I will rip through my savings and spend all this money on expensive Boston rent, but darn it, I'll find it.
Sure. What was it that got you interested in kind of, for lack of a better term at the time, the ed tech kind of thing,
yeah.
Pairing the educational stuff with the artistic side and building it all together?
Sure. I mean, I think I guess I wish I had like a really strong anecdote to explain why, like, what my connection to being interested in designing for kids or working with kids or building experiences for to support learning. I think it's just something that I've always sort of been interested in. Mm-hmm. I didn't babysit when I was little. I didn't spend a lot of time teaching anyone younger than, like, I taught a little bit in college, and I did a lot of TA work. But you know, it wasn't really about like the sitting and like teaching something. It was about accompanying people as they were learning something new and like sharing what I knew and like learning along with other people. And so that was something that I did a lot in college. Like I worked at our college's print lab for 3 of the years. And so like, I learned how to use all of the different machines, and like through that, I met everyone and like people in every major. And like, I sort of like learned how to do a little bit of everything. And because of that, I could share all of that with like my graphic design friends who were like needed to use like the architectural plotter, or mm-hmm. just knew they needed to make a big print and they had no idea how. And I was like, oh, well here, like, let's do this. And so I was always interested in learning as much as I could, so I could share that, like I could share that and with other people who were trying to like either solve a problem or learn how to do something. I kind of liked being that resource and like,
sure.
And also just like knowing all of those things so I could use them in my own work. So I think that must have been part of it. So I think I was also interested in how I could use tangible design and traditional material and like physical interactive objects to serve some sort of function, to like have mm-hmm. a purpose. You know, I got really into like interactive posters, and there was this incredible woman named Ji Chi, I think is how you pronounce her last name. And she was a research scientist at the MIT Media Lab. And she did this whole series of projects, or her whole doctorate was about interactive storytelling. And so she made mm-hmm. all of these pop-up books that would like, they light up and they would move using this stuff called muscle wire. That's this like really thin filament that if you apply heat or if you apply power to it, it'll like uncurl and move. And those things are also fascinating to me. So I think I kind of like followed that rabbit hole of like, okay, I want print design to like, I want the work that I'm doing to have purpose. Like, what is that purpose? Like, that purpose could be like a delightful interactive experience that you don't expect from a physical object. And then it was mm-hmm. like, okay, well, that's like, this is cool. Like, there are all of these like kind of niche like materials that I could use. Like, oh, I could silkscreen conductive ink, but like, for what reason? And so I think I eventually was realizing that like, oh, these could be used to emphasize learning concepts, or maybe even like be used to really enhance like an interaction with an object, especially if it's like, if you're trying to gain something from it. So I guess it was that. I'm sure that there must be like I had some really valuable like experiences with teachers as I was growing up, but I don't sure. know if it was really where that came from. But yeah, so I think, you know, I ended up there with my senior thesis, and then I kind mm-hmm. of, you know, designing and, you know, like the stuff that I'm into, like I was always a doodler. Like I always kind of came up with silly characters. Like right. I always like the kind of design that I like is like, lately I've been equating it to like kids' clothing. Like, you know how kids mm-hmm. just have like super bright patterns and like really cute sort of crisp, simple characters, and like, sure. there's, I don't know, there's like an elegance in the simplicity of how people, some things are designed for kids. I mean, some things are like super cheesy or super pandering, and there's just like gradients for days. But I think that there's something.
Gradients are coming back too.
I know, but there's a good way to use gradients and there's a bad way to use gradients, especially when you're making things for kids. And
yeah.
And so, yeah, we'll probably talk about DIY shortly, but like the thing that drew me to the platform or the company that I now work for, which is an online community for kids, was that you know, the design that they had was, it was so respectful. Like it was, you know, this is a community just for kids, but they had created this, like this really like beautiful, simple thing with these like really powerful, like illustrations that were like educational, but they didn't, you know, they, none of the copy that they wrote sort of pandered to kids. It didn't talk down to them. It empowered them. It treated them like they were, you know, they were people, they're young people who are learning and who are trying to grow. And it didn't treat them like they were like little kids who can't do anything. It's like, there is an element of that in the, in design. And I think that like trying to stay in that realm maybe has been what I was interested in. There's a lot of rambling, but the after Continuum, after freelancing, I convinced my boyfriend at the time that we should move to San Francisco, and then spent a couple of months convincing him that we should move to San Francisco, and then we ended up we up and left right in the middle of like Boston's most brutal winter in years.
Probably a good time to leave.
It was great. We left after we moved right in the middle of like the huge snow season. I think it was 12 or 15 snow days, and then we moved, and then they had another 10 after that. And we were, you know, lying in a park somewhere, and everyone was like, gosh, I dug my car out of the snow 4 times today. And we're like, oh boy, that sounds hard. Like greetings from San Francisco. But, so when I moved to San Francisco, I started working as a contract. It was kind of an internship that evolved into a contract position at this company called Kiwi Crate, which was honestly like the perfect fusion of everything I was interested in. Kiwi Crate is one of those. They now have a bunch of lines, but at the time it was just Kiwi Crate. It's a subscription box where you pay $20 and you get a box every month of different stuff.
Sure, like Art Snacks or Loot Crate or something like that.
Yeah, it was at the time, and is now especially, is like a huge industry of like pretty much any, you can get anything. I think there's a muffin box now. You can just get like different, I don't know.
You should not have told me that.
I will try to figure out exactly what that is, and I'll send you one.
Don't.
You can get anything in a box now. So Kiwi Crate was amazing because we each month had a different theme. So it was like the beach, the carnival, the space, like anything like that. Mm-hmm. And then we would send 2 project kits. One was usually arts and crafts based, and one was usually some sort of science or physics or engineering, like super simple concept. I worked in this product design team, and we would design what these activities were. And so we, you know, these were like, and so they, these were, our age range was pretty young. It was like 4 to 7. Mm-hmm. So we had, you know, we would focus on, certain concepts, like, you know, how to like practicing, like how to use scissors, or like really simple sewing, or adhering something with a rubber band. So we did a lot of research, especially with kids. Like we had kid testers come in every week and just rip apart everything, all of the prototypes that we had made. So we did a lot with like motor skills, and like exploring like the level of function that you could, or like dexterity you could expect a 5-year-old to have with a big plastic sewing needle and like holes punched in a felt crab. Like
sure.
We did. And so that was a really interesting, sort of research for me. But it was also a really incredible job, 'cause you know, we just like, we'd be like, okay, well for the beach, like, all right. So the beach crate, like we need, one, like, something that practices like fine motor skills, and something that is something that like makes them curious about like teaches them something about a certain type of animal. So we would come up with all these prototypes. Like I have sketchbooks and sketchbooks of just like really crude doodles of what we could do. And then we would sit in this huge arts and crafts room, and we would that we had in the front of the office, and we would just prototype and make these things and like play with them. And try to find really solid ideas. And then every Thursday would roll around, and we would make like a dozen copies of whatever thing we had come up with. We would have the kid testers come in, and we'd sort of sit down and we'd kind of walk them through how to use it. But when we sent the crates out, we actually sent sort of information architecture, like illustrative, these sort of like really basic illustrative diagrams and like vector doodles of like how you take like this ball and attach this thing to it and sure. then wrap this around. So it was a lot of really interesting illustration experience and like learning how to really simplify a concept for like how to make a project in 4 steps. Cause we really only had, like we sent the instructions in like these like unfolded magazines, which were a certain size and like we had limitations to the print. But yeah, that, you know, in a lot of ways that job and that work was super dreamy. It's like I was designing with real materials and like spent a lot of time like working with craft stuff and like cardboard or like thin balsa wood or anything like that. And then I would like the flip side of that, I would go and I worked on these 16 page magazines, like activity booklets. So I would be like constantly looking at like Highlights magazine and like all of the different benchmarks, which was, you know, the Highlights is still going, but like
it's every doctor's office in the world.
Looks exactly the same as it did in the doctor's office like 20 years ago. But they, yeah. So like looking and like designing different interesting versions of the dot game and like coming up with like really simple mazes and like simple spelling games and then like illustrating and laying all of those out. And then, you know, they got printed and then I could hold it in my hands and that really said I like scratched that, that print design itch. So that was really cool. And they actually, yeah, now, anyone who has kids, I'll give them a shout out. Like they have 4 or 5 different crate lines now for kind of every single age group.
Sure.
My favorite is it's called Tinker Crate, and it's these a lot of the kids on DIY, the company I work for, get the crate and like share their projects. And my buddy Andy is, I think he's still their head of product at Tinker Crate, and he does like take, he's a mechanical engineer, and he takes these concepts and he converts them into kind of kid friendly projects. So they build like these incredible catapults or like art machines or zoetropes, and they're just like, they're so cool. And they, you know, the projects are like, they've really figured out how to explain those concepts, and they make like really great videos and all of it's really cool. So, yeah, that was a super fun spot to work. And like do the design stuff. And then I ended up, I left after the contract period ended just due to, you know, San Francisco is expensive and it was super far away to get to. And so there were some things there that like I couldn't pull off working there full time. But I when I had been there, our CEO had sent out this email to everyone on the product team with a link to the DIY.org market, which had all of these amazing like cardboard based kits and like creative activities that they sold. Mm-hmm. And they had these really amazing animated GIFs of like the unboxing of the kits or like the stuff kind of all flying around and forming into the final object. And our CEO had sent out an email to everyone. She's like, I want it to feel like this. Like,
so is that how you learned about DIY?
I was like, oh, this place looks cool. Yeah.
Hey, sorry. My contract's coming to an end.
I wonder if they're hiring. And so, yeah, I ended up applying for a totally non-design job. I applied for a position doing curriculum development. And sort of what they were hiring was the head of the learning team to sort of like – dictate the whole company's pedagogy and like what kind of learning experience we wanted to be creating. Thank you. It's we talk about it. We talk about it a lot. But so like all of these, they were like looking for a person to kind of oversee that. Sure. And I, you know, I think it, I was like, I can do that. And I applied and I remember meeting the CEO, Zach, on a video call and like, you know, definitely looking for someone with, and the person that they ended up hiring who is she's wonderful and like, she's magnificent. She had worked at Pearson for like 25 years before that and had this like wealth of knowledge about so many topics and how to share those things with kids. And she knew so many people, but he ended up bringing me me in because he was interested in my I guess my passion for kind of the platform, and I probably yammered on about my interest in education for a long time. Mm-hmm. But I think he was interested in my design background and kind of how I was merging those two interests. And I've been there ever since. It'll be 3 years in August.
And what is it exactly that you do there now? Because like you said, you're not in a design role. So.
Yeah, which was a weird change a little bit, but so DIY. Well, so we actually have two platforms now, but when I came in, it was just DIY.org. Mm-hmm. DIY is a free online learning community for kids. So we have about 500,000 members around the world. You sign up, you get a free portfolio, and you use that to share projects that you make or things that you're passionate about. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of share those with this open, supportive community of other kids and find people around the world who are interested in the same things you are. And you can kind of like build a cohort. And it's all really kind of heavily focused around sharing original content and creating new things and learning new skills. So we, aside from the sort of free sharing portfolio aspect of it, we also have... and actually, at Creative South, I had a bunch of the patches on my backpack, and a ton of people recognized them. So you might have seen them before. But we have this huge library of resources that kids can use to teach themselves new skills. Mm-hmm. Kind of like a modern approach to scouting. We have these really beautiful embroidered skill patches that correspond to those skills. Okay. Much more modern skills, or like things that are kind of aligned with the interests of modern kids. So we have, our skills range from acting to zoology, but we have, mechanical engineering and beekeeping and Minecraft, cardboarding, I think might be a proprietary term. And we have they range in practicality. So we have biology and math and physics, but we also have, we also cover surrealism and, meme hacking and making viral content. And we have, darkness engineer for, creating Halloween, things related to Halloween and spooky. Sure. Holidays. So we just have this, it's just this really incredible community of only kids, no grownups are allowed. Our age range is 6 to 16. And it's just, this really positive, make, learn, share focused community. So when I came in as a contractor who was working on the skill content. So I was, mm-hmm. brought in to help refine some of the old stuff and to find and work with new partners to develop new skills. So just as a couple examples, I didn't work on it, but we worked with Mojang for the Minecrafter skill. Mm-hmm. I reached out and found an aeronautical engineer at NASA and built an astronaut skill with him. Right. We worked with some people to make a mathematician skill. We worked with the Lego Innovation Lab in Denmark to create our Lego Master skill. So we sort of have this wide collection of really interesting people that we have built relationships with, especially at different ed tech companies too. We worked with Scratch at MIT and made a Scratcher skill because that platform is MIT is a sort of intro to coding language and fundamentals. They use blocks to replace concepts like looping or if then statements to sort of connect kids to these programming concepts. So we're friends with them.
Are you sure you can't let adults in? Because I need that.
I
needed that simple.
Scratch is open to anybody. You can certainly go join Scratch. And they're very cool. But no, DIY is just for kids. Is a pretty solid amount of people who I explain DIY to say word for word, does this exist for adults? Can I join? It's I totally understand. I think the other phrase is oh, I wish something like this had existed when I was a kid. I definitely feel that. And it's really, I really enjoy being one of the few whitelisted adults who's allowed to contribute to this community. I mean, it's had a huge impact on my creative life. They're a wonderful group of people to share things with. I mean, they think everything is awesome, or they're very careful about being very constructive and positive, but it's really fun to share experiments with them and then like wait 24 hours and see that four kids have all tried to like paint on glass or like do, or have like started sewing or like doing any of the things that I like to do and or like am trying to share with them. So mm-hmm. it's a really cool, it's a very interesting sort of different approach to teaching and to like working with a community. So I started as the skill master, and then I transitioned into being the community manager. So I sort of was overseeing kind of the, the holistic experience of being on DIY, like using the skills, participating in the community. And I kind of oversaw, support related to behavioral issues. If we ever had kids who were like calling each other poop heads, I just like spent a long time learning how to communicate and work with the community to, make sure that they felt comfortable sharing things with us, especially if like there was like somebody was being like, there was bullying going on or heaven forbid, like inappropriate content would show up, which is very rare, fortunately. So I was pretty sort of heavily focused on that for about a year and a half. And then last year at the beginning of the summer, just about a year now, I think, we launched our second platform, which mm-hmm. is called Jam, jam.com, which is, it approaches learning in a similar way to DIY, except instead of having this huge library of different skills to explore, it's more focused around finding, like, once you've found that thing that you're super passionate about, like animation or like building architecture with Lego or mm-hmm. Singing and performing or something like that. Excuse me. Then we find these really incredible, mentors, like adult mentors who, have these passions and live and pursue them professionally. Mm-hmm. And then we work with these people to make video courses, where they come up with a series of projects that progress you through what it's like to do that thing professionally or like how to become, you know, a professional animator. And you work with them to learn all of the tips and tricks that they learned in school and through years of experience. We give like behind the scenes look of like what it's like to work in the Cartoon Network office or it's like to like be about to go on stage to like accept an award or like things like that. So we've built these little small communities of kids who are all taking these different courses. And so they progress through these projects. They sort of hyper focus on this one particular skill and like meet kids who are also progressing through the same course, and they get mentorship and support from our staff and they get to learn from these incredible mentors. So when we launched Jam, I was promoted to managing all of DIY.org. I had worked there for almost 2 years, and I had been the most heavily focused on the community, and I had kind of the strongest overview of how the entire system worked and like all of the employees who were working there. So I was promoted, and so now I manage the entire platform. I kind of oversee. I oversee the community and the product development. So I'm pretty heavily involved. I work pretty closely with our CEO to kind of determine what, like, where we want the role of the platform to go. I kind of PM and design, like, help design a lot of the new features that we work on. I kind of do a little bit of everything, which again, like, aligns pretty closely to my interest in sort of like dabbling sure. a little bit of everything. We do a lot. I get to run a lot of user testing and design research with our community to help understand how we can teach them better and connect them better to concepts that they don't, that, you know, maybe they're intimidated to try. So there's a lot of really interesting design problems that I get to solve that aren't necessarily visual design based, but still like they really connect. I really connect to them based on my interests in, you know, education and learning and how design can kind of help solve those problems. It's like, you know, if you have 100 kids who don't understand a concept, but you can like switch the color of this button or change the size of this word so that they understand like, oh, mycology is about mushrooms, like by giving sure, them sure. an image of it. Like those are really powerful learning insights that I'm super grateful to be in a position to kind of be surrounded by. Mm-hmm. So I've learned a lot, and I've gained a lot of experience in this industry of like designing things for kids and understanding what education could look like. And especially now that so many people are getting disenfranchised with traditional education, so many people are realizing how little success it has for so many, especially creative kids. Right. And, you know,
you've got kids with special needs and things like that. Like my wife and I homeschool our kids, and my kids are both on the autism spectrum, and a traditional classroom just wasn't the right fit for them.
Yeah.
So, you know, we use DIY.org. We try to get them interested in stuff and have a long enough attention span to pay attention to it. But
that's one of the remarkable things I think about DIY from the beginning is, you know, DIY, the system is, you know, we've done our best to kind of limit all the bells and whistles and keep it really simple and straightforward. And we've found a really wide range of success for kids with any level, like at any age level, at any level of learning ability, at with any form of like learning disability or social disorder or anything like that. We find that those kids can really sort of form their own sort of version of the community that works well for them. And we see tremendous testimonials from parents of like really shy kids or kids with autism or Asperger's who felt very uncomfortable or didn't know how to share their work or communicate mm-hmm. with their kids or would just get overwhelmed in sort of real life scenarios, and they really like the practice that they got just trying to speak to like on a video camera to explain their project or being able to sort of concentrate on writing a description and like getting positive feedback from, you know, a community that's blind to any sort of thing that a kid could be self-conscious about in real life. Like these are kids who think that like any kid who tries, who like shares something valuable, who's nice to other people, like you can be a rock star by default just because like just nice like that. And that is a really supportive environment for a lot of kids. And so that especially, I think, is something that I'm really proud to be a part of. It's cool. I'm so glad that your kids are a part of DIY.
Yeah. So, you know, you've been going through all this, like you said, your job, while there is a lot of creativity to what you have to do, it's not a quote unquote creative role. What are you doing in your free time to keep up and keep those creative juices flowing?
Yeah, sure. I think it's a creative role that has very little visual creativity.
Sure.
And like there's really no, like, I don't get to like, I don't know. It was kind of interesting. 'Cause like we would make a lot of like cardboard contraptions and stuff like that in the office. But I think, you know, I struggled at first, especially like the first year, maybe year and a half that I was there. And I was like sort of learning a lot about community management and like learning all of these, like kind of there, you know, a lot of that was very, you know, I'm young enough that I had access to online communities in my early teens. And so I kind of like, I grew up in environments like that. My parents were like, oh, we don't know about this internet thing. Like maybe you shouldn't. So I didn't get a ton, but, I sort of had some familiarity and some curiosity about that. I felt there, you know, when you're trained in something, when you have this expertise in something like I had in design, you sort of understand what success looks like for you, or like you have mm-hmm. that kind of foundation of like your expectations for yourself. And like what, like, you know, even if you get bad feedback or like you get really, like you get harsh criticism, like you still sort of understand that baseline of like, okay, well, like I'm using type, I'm doing this thing. But in switching to a completely sort of new profession, which was community management, I there were a lot of opportunities to learn, a lot of kind of like things that I was absorbing and learning from my coworkers. But I think I was kind of missing that foundation, that baseline of like knowing whether I was doing a good job. And, you know, so sure. like part of that comes in from management and mentorship in the company, but I also, or like that, you know, I got some of it from that, but you know, on a day-to-day basis, I was like, well, I hope I said the right thing in that email. Like, well, I hope I didn't hurt that kid's feelings by being like, your birdhouse could have been better. So like, I kind of felt a little unseated, because of that. And I think that, I was sort of, I had like a creative slump for a while that sort of, I felt pretty bad. Like I wasn't like making anything. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to, you know, I wasn't sure. I don't want to just not be a designer. Like I want to keep making things. Like I want to keep my skills sharp. Like I want to work. I will update my website one of these days, like that kind of thing. So I was like, well, I should be like making side projects. Like I want to come home and I want to like have something to chew on. And I really struggled with finding something to do. I think that's a thing that a lot of creative people struggle with, probably especially people who like do creative work all day. Like I think I know I was talking to some people at Creative South actually, who like do the creative work and then they come home and they just sort of feel like that's been, they're like sapped for the day. They're like, oh, I like solved these things at work.
I am one of those guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So, I kind of had the opposite problem. It's like, I had all of this, like, it's like, I have to make something, like, duh. But I didn't know what I wanted to make and I didn't have any reason to be making something. And like, sure. I didn't want to take on freelance work cause I was tired and I don't have good time management for freelance projects. And I was like, I was really struggling with that. And then this thing happened and it changed everything. No, so there was this project emerged, mm-hmm. this thing called the 100-Day Project, was announced. And so it's this, it's a creative prompt that was built around the Instagram community, or built in the Instagram community. It was started by this woman named Elle Luna, who's a painter and an artist. And, actually she's done a lot of design work. She worked at, like Uber and, Google, I think, and like did a bunch of things, but she partnered with The Great Discontent and they launched this, prompt to the community that started in April of 2015. Mm-hmm. That was the basic premise of this thing was like, you pick a topic, you pick an action, I think is the word that they use. Like you pick a creative action. So like painting a portrait every day, like drawing an observation on a sticky note, like writing a haiku, like you pick ideally a bite-sized, like something that's actually doable in a few minutes. Sure. You pick action and then you repeat that action every day for 100 consecutive days. And it's supposed to be a meditation on like the art of actually making something. And like you sort of examine what your process is like. You're not really supposed to focus on the end result. You focus on just showing up and checking in every day and making creative output sort of a default. Mm-hmm. Part of your daily schedule. And so I was like, maybe I'll do this. I don't know. And I didn't really know what I was going to do. And I liked this idea. And so I ended up, around that time, a kid on DIY, this girl, her username is Meg March. She sewed this cute little like 4-inch fox that was wearing these like bright blue felt overalls. Mm-hmm. And it was super cute. And for some reason I was really attached to this object that she had made. Like I really enjoyed this kid. I really liked this kid's work and she, like her ideas always really inspired me. So I went out to, I like went to the fabric store and like bought a couple sheets of felt and like came back and sat at my desk one night after work and like sewed my own version of this fox that she had made. And I remember like finishing it and looking at it and being like, oh, like I really enjoyed like making this thing. And like, that was a feeling that I hadn't felt in a while. Mm-hmm. Like that was a feeling I didn't get when I stared at like a blank Illustrator artboard. And so I kind of like, I really had enjoyed it. And, you know, it was like, there was something very nice about, taking these really cheap materials, this like, you know, like 30-cent piece of felt and like 60-cent skein of floss, and turning them into like this character. Sure. And so I really enjoyed that. And I decided, to go all in and make 100 of those, make 100 like creatures. And I ended up, I took the 100-Day Project and I sort of repackaged it and presented it to the DIY community. Mm-hmm. And I invited them all, like, you know, Instagram isn't available for kids under 13. And right. Since our community welcomes kids, 6 and up, like we had dozens of, like, you know, hundreds of about thousands of kids who couldn't have participated in the thing on Instagram. So I thought that it might be a really great sort of open-ended creative prompt to introduce to the kids. So sure. I made a video explaining it and saying like, hey, I'm going to drive myself nuts and sew 100 of these felt things. Like, and then I did this silly thing where I promised in the video that any kid who did the 100-day project and finished it, I would send them one of my finished felt creatures from the 100. So I was like, locking myself into finishing it. I was like, all right, you can't not do it. And then of course I had like a solid 100 kids all say like, okay, I'll do it. And I was like, oh, okay, well, great. Like, I guess I'm doing this now. And so I did it, and I sewed 100 of these like felt creatures, in 2015. And they were pretty much like, some of them were animals or like humanoid shapes, but the rest of them were like personified or anthropomorphized objects. So I'd take like a traffic cone or like a gumball machine or like a lava lamp, and I would give them all this sort of consistent arms, legs, two beady black eyes structure. And then I built this like whole collection of 100 different characters who were all very consistent, but they're all also these like really weird like lumpy felt things that I made. And I did it, and I finished it, and I had this like, suddenly I went from having like no idea what creative project to do to like being way in over my head and having this like 2 to 3 hour commitment every day. But I finished it, and it went great. And like 75 kids on DIY all did the project. Wow. Like some kids did like polymer clay sculptures every day. One kid wrote a novel. She did like a chapter every day. Jesus. There was a kid who made, this kid like rendered a whole 3D animation. Like he worked on it every day in Blender. Kids are amazing. I'm telling you, like they're way better than we are at everything. But we, just like this incredible collection of things. One kid built like a Minecraft house every day. So yeah, it was just like this incredible output. And then I entered into, shipping hell and had to send like 75 felt creatures to like kids around the world. And I used this, like, I used this like San Francisco based service that it like helps you mail your stuff. And like, this is like lazy, but I'm okay with it, 'cause I have to send so much of these. And then like a bunch of them ended up getting mixed up with like Etsy orders. And like, it was a nightmare. But they all eventually got, it was like things were sent to the wrong international addresses. It was hell, but, it all got sorted out, and it was super overwhelming, and it was a really crazy commitment, and I was like, I'm never doing that again. And then the next year came around, and I was like, maybe I'll just try to do the same thing but smaller so it's quicker. And so I ended up doing the 100-day project again last year, and I sewed in keeping with the like two beady black eyes, I switched to making 2.5-inch square felt faces. So every day was a different face. And I used that as a, my approach for that was wanting to really work on my embroidery skills and like working on, like getting better at details and refinements, and then seeing kind of what textures and, ideas and different like objects that I could evoke with felt, which felt like, you know, it kind of felt like a very limited material the first year. Is like, you know, I had these like bright sort of limited range of solid colors, and I was just making like these different kind of objects out of it. And so the second year was more about character design and improving my technical skills. And like, hopefully, I was hoping it would be a lot faster. It was certainly more portable, but they ended up being a really intense commitment also. That project, the first year I shared it on DIY and on Instagram, and maybe on Facebook too. And it was like, it was cool. It was a good project for me to sort of like get back into the swing of making something and like actually like really feeling like I was like making things that I was proud of, and like, or things that like, I felt like, you know, I had this like tangible output every day. And that was really valuable for me as a person who like needed to like have an anchor for that, because I didn't like, I didn't have that as much in the work that I was doing. And so, yeah. And then, so the second year, the Felt Faces ended up growing this really, insane organic, following. And I got, a lot of coverage on the project, even like in the middle of it. You know, it was covered on, I think like BuzzFeed and Bored Panda, like a bunch of those like interesting stuff aggregators, like Bored Panda and, sure. Like things like that. I remember my grandfather's girlfriend apparently got an email, that had like my name and my work in it. And she was like, oh, hello. But yeah, I got, so that was a really, totally unexpected, but kind of amazing side effect of that, of last year's project. It was like, you know, it was this sort of personal meditation every day of like trying to create something, like trying to like really push myself to create something that I was happy with, which is not a good idea. If you do the 100-day project, don't stress yourself out about that. But, yeah. And then it suddenly like, it just really started to resonate with people. And I started getting a lot of really positive feedback, and, a lot of people, like a really intimidating amount of people started following the project. And,
sure.
That was a really totally unexpected, very strange thing to work with, or to mm-hmm. like kind of, have waiting for me every day. Is like, you know, there's this stress of like, feeling like you have, like, you know, you don't want to like feel like you have to perform for an audience when you're trying to do like a creative project that has personal meaning. Mm-hmm. So that was something that I kind of struggled with a little bit, but I, you know, I was so, last year had a lot of challenge. Well, last year was challenging for everybody. But last year was, pretty challenging. I went through a breakup. I had to move. I like had to find my own apartment in San Francisco, which is not fun if you've ever had to do it.
I can't imagine.
Oh boy. I was promoted to that job. So that changed a lot of like my daily time commitment. And so I was sure. just like, I was processing all of these personal changes and like trying to, figure out which direction I wanted to point my life into, and sort of having like something to anchor myself onto. And that ended up being for me, like my Felt Faces was like, you know, every, like that was like, if I had a day where I like could put all of the other stuff aside and like really finish that project, like that was like my little success for the day. It was like, you know, it was an opportunity to like put my machine, like my devices away, like put on like, I listened to like a lot of, like bluegrass, music or like some sort of acoustic or non, some kind of word, and it's just like focus on that. And then like have this thing, and like, I would feel better that day if I had like had this creative output. It was like, it really starts to ingrain itself in your schedule. Like you go from sort of having like idle moments on the bus where you're like, well, I don't know what I'm going to do today. Or like, oh, I like worrying about work or like doing all those things. And then like suddenly you just have these little pockets of time, and like I would carry around like my Felt Faces with me. And it's like, suddenly I like had 5 minutes to like sit and like meditate on like making this thing. Mm-hmm. And so that was really like, I got a lot of really insane personal value at like from that. And like I was very connected to that project. And so it was incredible to have, to also have this kind of unexpected element of like other people who were like feeling very inspired or motivated to make something every day, or to like start learning how to sew, or, just feeling like they could maybe have time to work on, like more creative projects, mm-hmm. just based off of like the, you know, the silly little things that I was making every day. And that was a really, I don't know, that was incredible. I mean, there's really, I still don't know how to kind of talk about it. It's like, but it's very cool.
And you were telling me before we started talking that you're doing a show or something around
the
Felt Faces.
Yeah. So the Felt Faces have lived in a box since, December of last year. Yeah. I'm doing the 100-day project again right now. So I've moved away from sewing and I'm doing something a little different, which we can touch on. But yeah, so the Felt Faces, I really want to I've been trying to figure out what to do with them. Like, I really want to display them in my apartment and build like a really crazy, like clear acrylic grid box frame that I like working on, like the laser cut file for. But I really wanted to figure out how to show them somewhere, and like, cause, you know, they're best experienced in person. Like, they're like these tangible objects you want to like squish and feel. And so I got invited to do, there's a woman opening a gallery in Portland in the middle of June of this year. And her gallery is called The Tiny Llama, and it focuses on, like handmade and limited, like local things in like Portland and then the West Coast. But the focus is tiny art. And so she came across my felt faces, and she, thought that they would make a great, sort of show concept. So we chatted and we set up so I'm going to be doing a month long solo show, in Portland through the month of July. The opening event is July 7th, which is a Friday. I think
that's my birthday.
Oh, perfect. Well, you should fly to Portland and I will get you a cake or give you a felt face maybe. But happy almost birthday. But yeah, so I'll be doing that. I'm very excited because I have all of these like tiny little squares. I think I'm going to be ridiculous and actually make 100 tiny little like wall shelves. And so each one will have its own little shelf on like, because the wall is like, the wall that I have to display them is like 9 by 8 feet. So I got plenty.
Yeah, you got a lot of space to fill there.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm going to be showing those. And so I'm still trying to figure out what exactly to do with them. I occasionally make and sell some on Etsy. But since I've been pretty invested in this year's project, I haven't been doing so much of that. But it is tremendously cool that people are interested in like buying these little things that I make. I'm very, very grateful to have that opportunity, even if I don't have a lot of time that I can put into it.
Sure. But. And this year you've been doing pockets. Where did that idea come from?
This year's is weird. I think every year with this project, I try to, like, I understand that I'm going to probably pick something that's a little bit too much of an undertaking. Sure. And so I just try to figure out, like, what the personal benefits of it for, like, what, you know, what skills I want to practice, like, what I want my personal takeaway to be, and, like, what role I kind of want it to play. Because it's, like, it suddenly is just this thing that's always present, is, like, always in your mind. And you're always thinking about, like, the next thing you're going to make, or, like, how you're going to finish your current one. So this year, I think this is going to be the last year that I'm going to do a felt-based 100-day project. So I was like, all right, might as well like get some nice felt and like maybe like do a crazy project. So I bought 75 so far, but I'm going to buy another 25 different colored t-shirts. And like just blank t-shirts. And I have been making a t-shirt pocket every day, out of felt. I bought this like really nice, I bought a sampler of like super nice wool felt, which is like, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't get fuzzy or it doesn't like pill when it gets the like little pebbly bits on it. And I've been using that to do, just to explore sort of, I guess I like, it's the most graphic design related like I've gotten with this project. I think last year was really like illustrative and character design, but this year is kind of like exploring, like, I don't know. It's been interesting to sort of step back and try to see how simple I could get, in exploring, like graphic compositions and like how simple I can make a piece of felt and still have it look like a piece of sushi, or like a, or like how simple I can replicate like the texture of grass or something like that. So I've been making these little, like either vignettes or like patterns, or just like weird graphic somethings on t-shirt pockets every day. And I am already several weeks behind as expected, but I think I get 30 done so far, and I have a big old pile of t-shirts in my apartment that are still waiting for pockets. So but it's been very cool, and I think that everyone has been super supportive and has really said a lot of nice things about the pockets that I've been making so far. It actually started the day before Creative South started. So no wonder
you got behind.
Yeah. No. I kept up with it the whole trip. It was challenge accepted. I guess I got to try. So most of my suitcase was loose felt and t-shirts that I wasn't actually going to wear to come to Creative South. I think I did all 5 days. I got my shirts done and photographed and posted. I'm still going for it. It's kind of, I sort of shoot myself in the foot because I like photographing them in natural light, because artificial mm-hmm. light really reflects the texture of the felt and sort of
sure.
makes it look a little strange. So I'm still trying to work on an artificial light setup, but like natural light really
smooths it out.
It presents the pockets in the best light, if you will. So if I finish it like in the evening, I usually can't post it until the next day. So sometimes that has a sort of stacking effect, and then I'll get a little bit behind, or I just don't have the strength or anything like that, but
sure.
I'm trying to keep up. So
my favorites so far have been the alien abduction one.
Yeah.
and the Mondrian.
Oh, I loved, yeah. I really enjoyed making the Mondrian. I really want to do, more fine art ones. I made, I don't know if you've seen, have you seen the felt faces from last year?
Mm-hmm.
I made, there is a Van Gogh Starry Night one mm-hmm. that I embroidered all of the, pointillism, like all of the expressionism details. And it took maybe 3 or 4 days, but it was like right before I was moving into my new apartment and I didn't have any internet. So sure. I was just like sitting there.
So you
there
had time to kill.
Yeah. I think I uploaded that picture in a Starbucks. Like I didn't have, but I don't think I'll be doing any Van Gogh, but, I really want to do like a Chuck Close piece.
Ooh, that'd be cool.
And try doing like layers of sort of, organic shapes that, I think I've been stuck because I don't know what I want the subject to be. Like, I don't want it to be my face, and I don't really want to just like recreate one of his portraits. I want to like have like a thing, like something in it, but I haven't really figured that out yet. I was really tempted to do like a pointillism thing with like these little tiny, they're called French knots. They're like these mm-hmm. little embroidery, just like little circles, and I was considering doing thousands of them and making like a pointillism piece, but I think I would probably want to cry, so I don't know if I'm going to do that.
You might want to save that for after the 100 Days project.
Yeah.
Just make that like one big project.
Yeah. Well, and I also, yeah, the fun thing about the, the felt is not like ideal for a t-shirt pocket. It's kind of
sure.
just the material I really like working with. Though surprisingly, I've done a couple of wash tests and they've all come out fine. But I think, I've been thinking about how I can recreate some of the designs using like silk screen or block printing, mm-hmm. And like actually like using a t-shirt knit fabric to make the pockets. So
that'd
I can
be cool.
sell some small runs of them, just of like the ones that people like. So that's also like trying to keep everything super simple and super graphic has been kind of the theme of this year. And just mm-hmm. trying to see how much I can create with the sort of simplest shapes. And that's partially a design challenge and partially an effort to save my brain, but
sure.
it is an ongoing sort of fun creative exercise to balance out the otherwise very large amount of emails that I have to send on a regular basis.
Yeah, I can imagine. So, we're kind of getting close to our time here. What aside from the show that you've got coming up, what is on the tap for you?
Well, that's a good question. I guess, I think like the show is kind of the big thing. I was talking to two people had reached out about teaching embroidery classes, which would be kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I think like I've got my hands pretty full with the kind of ongoing full-time job, which takes up like a solid 80% of my waking hours. And then
that's what
the,
jobs
you know, do. Yeah, yes, it certainly does. But like on weekends too. So I like, yeah. I'm kind of on call always in case something happens. And like, I'm, you know, I manage all of the employees and like moderators that work for the platform. So I kind of have to, kind of be connected to that all the sure. time, which is, again, like I really, really love it. And that helps, but it is nice to have like these projects that I can disconnect for a little bit. Mm-hmm. But you know, aside from that, I think the pockets kind of are looming in my future. So I still have 70 more to go. So I'm still chewing on that. Otherwise, nothing too exciting. And like, yeah, I think the trip isn't, yeah, the show is going to be in July. I'm going to like road trip up the coast and go do that. But otherwise nothing too crazy. But there, I don't know, like sort of interesting. I've received a lot of really interesting kind of commissioned work requests and freelance projects related to the felt, stuff. And like, those have been fascinating. Like, I've been asked to make portraits and like embroider tracksuits and make stop motions using felt. And there's been a lot of really interesting projects that have come. I got a request from someone at Tinder to like make a bunch of like Tinder logo. Like, there's just been like a bunch of really interesting projects that sort of that occasionally pop up. So who knows? But cool. I've been enjoying it.
Awesome. Well, where can people find you online?
I primarily use Instagram. It's kind of just like an ongoing portfolio of like my pockets, but then like other little experiments and projects I'm working on. My handle is Bargraf, like the chart, but with an F, BARGRAF. That's kind of it. I have a Twitter account. It's Becky at Becky Margraf. I'm not a super avid tweeter, but I do post I post a lot of pictures on it, and then
you have your Instagram forward too.
Stuff. Yeah, no, I don't actually. I probably should. That would be smart, wouldn't it? Yeah. No, I like
save you time.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, I kind of like just having like the, I don't know, so many links. But I run the DIY Twitter account. Along with one or two other people, but so I post a lot of like stuff about learning and weird projects there. So you could follow at DIY and say hey. but yeah, Twitter and Instagram are probably a good place to say hi.
Awesome. Well, Becky, thank you so much for taking the time to chat.
Yeah,
with me
thanks
today.
So much.
And we end every show, and since you've been to Creative South, I'm sure you've heard this, by saying go out and hug some necks. Which is just, you know, the way of saying go out and make friends and don't be a stranger. Would you mind taking us out by saying that?
Yeah. And the first time I saw it, I thought it said hashtag huge necks. And I was like, that's weird. but hug necks. I've loved that since the first time I heard it. So yeah, let's go out and hug some necks.
Awesome. Thanks, Becky.
Bye. Thanks, Jason.
You can find out more about Becky on Twitter at Becky Margraf, and be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with her. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at Creative SO Pod, and follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Creative South GA, or over at creativesouth.com. And I'm at Jay Frostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. Visit jackprints.com and get 20% off orders over $25 when you use promo code CREATESOUTH17 at checkout. For a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code CREATIVESOUTH. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at patreon.com/CreativeSouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.